Tomorrow, President Bush will give the State of the Union address. In case they're burning the midnight oil at the White House tonight in preparation for tomorrow's speech, we've asked some of the people who've written commentaries for this program over the last year for their suggestions for the State of the Union address. We begin with Ray Salazar, who teaches English at Hubbard High School in Chicago.
At the end of my teaching day, where one of my classes is in the library because we don't have enough classrooms, I consider what my high school students know about the State of the Union when the school bells ring and the locker doors slam. This is when I have to raise my hand and say, President Bush, I have some suggestions for your speech. First, please say that scholarship recruiters will storm high schools in our working class neighborhoods and shove pens in students' hands like military recruiters because our adolescents need more opportunities. I have a former student stationed at Camp Lejeune who doesn't want to be there anymore, who didn't want to be there in the first place. He should have gone to art school instead, but the Marines promised scholarship money when he couldn't find it anywhere else. Secondly, please ask for feedback on your persuasive essay on stopping terrorism. Your introduction with cause and effect examples was perfect. Your second paragraph defining Al-Qaeda was superb, and we followed you completely. But how did you get to the section on Saddam Hussein? Writing teachers everywhere are waving their red pens asking, where's your transition? How did you get from bin Laden to Iraq? As a teacher, I believe social change happens in a classroom full of students before it happens on our streets. So please say that peace must begin within our boundaries before we fight for it somewhere else. Please say that in neighborhoods like Chicago's 26th Street, where immigrants and American citizens thrive culturally but suffer socially, young women will now find it easier to get government money for producing ideas in a classroom instead of reproducing at 15. Please stop for a moment, Mr. President, and offer your support for the DREAM Act. It provides scholarships for undocumented immigrants who came here at a young age, who have earned high GPAs, who have merited a place in our universities, and who have made positive impacts on our cities. Because in this country, hard work is supposed to be rewarded. As a teacher, I stay awake at night sometimes, thinking about how to keep peace in my classroom, pencils in my students' hands, and questions on my students' minds. So I wonder what you're thinking these nights, Mr. Bush, as you prepare to stand before millions of hands asking question after question that all begin with, why?
High school teacher Ray Salazar is also a student in the writing program at DePaul University.
Now we turn to policy analyst Merrill Matthews about health care issues, which are likely to provoke much debate in the coming year. Tomorrow night, Merrill Matthews wants to hear the president address the problem of the approximately 41 million Americans without health insurance.
What the uninsured need is access to affordable health insurance. And here are three steps President Bush could propose in his State of the Union address to help them get it. First, health insurance needs to be more affordable. The question is, how to do it? We help low-income families by providing food stamps so they can buy the food they need. Why not provide assistance to uninsured people so they can buy their own health insurance policies? Under one proposal, supported by Republicans and Democrats, uninsured individuals could get up to $1,000 and families up to $3,000 a year to purchase health insurance. In many states, that will buy a basic high-deductible policy. The family could use its own money to buy more comprehensive coverage. Second, let those who want to buy very basic health insurance coverage. For 30 years, states have been passing laws that require insurers to cover virtually every medical provider or service, including acupuncture, naturopaths, and wigs. While these mandates make health insurance more comprehensive, they also make it more expensive. It's like saying to someone buying a car, if you can't afford a Cadillac loaded with options, you go without. Third, we need a system that puts more money in the consumer's hands and less in the hands of insurers. Millions of Americans have flexible spending accounts, which allow workers to set tax-free money in an account to spend on health care needs. The problem is, if workers don't spend the money by year's end, they lose it. Why not let the money roll over to the next year so people have it when they really need it? If we did, many workers would choose less expensive, high-deductible policies and put the money they save in their accounts for future health care needs. Or better yet, the president should remove the restrictions that limit access to medical savings accounts, which work a lot like those flexible spending accounts, but without the use-it-or-lose-it provision. Now, there are reports that President Bush will propose similar solutions in his State of the Union address. While these steps won't solve all of our health care problems, they would go a long way toward increasing access to affordable health insurance.
Merrill Matthews is a visiting scholar with the Institute for Policy Innovation in Dallas.
Racial issues have come up frequently for President Bush and the Republican Party in the last couple of months. There was, of course, Senator Trent Lott's praise of Strom Thurmond's segregationist presidential campaign, but also the Bush administration's legal brief on affirmative action and the president's renomination of Judge Charles Pickering, which is opposed by the NAACP.
Commentator Kathy Y. Wilson isn't sure what President Bush might say on the topic of race in tomorrow's State of the Union speech, and not knowing is what concerns her.
My dear President Bush, this isn't calculus, but you've been calculating. And boy, oh boy, have you got some splaining to do. What better time than your State of the Union address? We'll all be there, and we'd like new answers to old questions. Like, what's your stance on Senator Trent Lott? Where do you stand? Your silence is deafening surrounding Lott's Song of the South for America's segregated past. There's no doubting where Lott stands on the color line. Thankfully, he said it. But you, Mr. President, you've dodged bullets, you've been slippery, hands-off, and even passive. You've let GOP underlings dog Lott off his high post. Yet, during the 2000 election, you grubbed for Southern votes by declining a stance against state capitals flying Confederate flags. Tie these together and we're beginning to wonder about you, sir. I imagine your speechwriters and advisors scrambled after Thurmond's birthday party, and they came up with, well, nothing. In the GOP, the new white nationalism has reared its red-necked head. And mum's been your word. Therein lies your problem. You gotta talk. We're left wondering whether this new century Republican Party really loves its Negroes, or are they just lawn jockeys? Not to worry, Mr. President. I've got ideas. Here's how you can let America know, A, where you come down on Lott's lot, and B, that you're serious about not slapping blackface all over the Republican Party. First, endorse affirmative action. Merely shuffling Negroes to greater visibility within your administration, that's fine. But they're already there, so that's not really outing yourself as anything other than what you are. Your vocal support of affirmative action spells decisiveness and progressiveness. But I know you won't do it. Or try telling America you'll propose a bill to begin a commission to study the feasibility of slavery reparations. It won't make you a coddler. However, it would show your seriousness in addressing and eradicating the time-honored racism that got Lott in trouble in the first place. But I know you won't do that either. Here's what you can do. Apologize. Not for Lott. Rather, apologize for your guilt by association, for not stepping up quickly, and for leaving us to this guessing game. In case you didn't know it, apologies go a long way with Negroes. Simply assure us that Lott's America is not your America, and that Lott's GOP isn't your GOP, because we already know neither one belongs to us. Sincerely, Kathy Y. Wilson.
Kathy Y. Wilson writes the column called Your Negro Tour Guide for the weekly Cincinnati City Beat.
The State of the Union address is mainly aimed at an American audience, but this year the world is watching the U.S. especially closely. Former Assistant Deputy Defense Secretary Kurt Campbell says the president's speech should reflect that.
On a recent trip to Asia, I was repeatedly asked the same question. After the United States is done with Iraq, where and with whom will the United States go to war next? The question is a bit jarring to American ears, but it underscores a growing belief abroad. The United States is increasingly viewed as being more interested in prosecuting war than in promoting peace. The compassion and sympathy that many friends and allies alike had for the United States in the wake of the September 11th tragedies is fading, and fading fast. In its place is a growing apprehension about American power and purpose, and a sense that the United States is just itching for a fight. In the State of the Union address, the president speaks to the American people. This year, President Bush has an opportunity, perhaps a fleeting one, to speak to the world. The president must strike a most delicate balance. He must remind our friends abroad that we are in the midst of a long twilight struggle against terrorism, a struggle that respects no international boundaries or laws of warfare, waged by an enemy that sees World Trade Center workers and Bali tourists as legitimate targets. This struggle will require common vigilance and a sustainment of purpose, not just from Washington, but from capitals from London to Singapore, New Delhi to Djibouti. At the same time, the president must also communicate more clearly that Americans do not seek to wage an endless series of global conflicts like some latter-day crusade. One of the historic attractions of the United States has been our enduring effort to promote the peaceful handling of chronic disputes, to sit down and roll up our proverbial sleeves around the negotiating table. The United States has traditionally played this role with Israelis and Palestinians, in Northern Ireland, on the disputed island of Cyprus, and on the divided Korean Peninsula. Lately, friends and foes alike have begun to question whether the United States brings the same commitment to building peace as it does in preparing for conflict. Too often now, we hear voices from abroad that suggest that the United States prefers fighting to talking, and that we have shunned both international cooperation and constructive diplomacy. The president must reassure an increasingly worried and anxious world that the United States is still engaged in the proud pursuit of peace at the same time that we maintained our armed vigilance. It's a hard balance, but an equilibrium we must sustain to preserve our military and our moral standing in a dangerous world.
Kurt Campbell is a senior vice president at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. We also heard suggestions for tomorrow night's State of the Union address from newspaper columnist Kathy Y. Wilson, policy analyst Merrill Matthews, and high school teacher Ray Salazar.